Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome along to the latest episode of the Manchester Red Podcast on the Manchester Evening News. We're available now on all the usual podcast platforms as well as YouTube as well. So if you want to go and check us out over there. You can watch us as we record as well. I'm today's host, George Smith, and I'm joined as always by our Chief United writer, Samuel Luckhurst, and Rich Fay as well. Samuel, first of all, how are you?
Yep, very well. Thank you, George. Nice to have you back on as always.
Excellent. Thank you. And Rich, have you just about recovered from a classic FA Cup tie at the racecourse on Sunday afternoon?
Just about. We said on last week's podcast that was the FA Cup tie I was actually looking forward to this weekend. And yeah, it was a contrast from Old Trafford on Saturday night, let us put it that way.
Well, speaking of Saturday night, United, of course, continued their excellent run of form at home, making it 11 wins on the trot at Old Trafford, beating Reading 3-1 in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Samuel, Rich, both of you were there on Saturday night. It was a bit of a slow burner, certainly in the first half, but United, once they got that first goal, it kind of opened the floodgates a little bit, Casemiro with a moment of brilliance. And in the end, it was more than enough to get the job done. Samuel, how would you reflect on the game as a whole? And it's another win on the board and into the fifth round of the Cup.
Well, I was particularly relieved because the replay would almost certainly have been played next Wednesday, which is my birthday. And although I don't really care about my birthday as much as I used to when I was younger, the prospect of having to trek to Berkshire for an FA Cup replay really did fill me with dread. So I was particularly pleased from a professional and a personal perspective when Casemiro put United 1-0 up, and from that point on they didn't look back. Another three goal win, they seem to be making a habit of that in home games. I think that's four of the last five home wins they've scored three goals in, which is decent consistency. That some of those games they still should be taking teams to the cleaners, but as we've said time and again, that's been an issue for all of this season so far, and it probably will be until May as well, you would imagine. But in the end, they did what they needed to do. I suspect that you could hear from some of the supporters that there was a bit of anxiety, because when they had that goal disallowed in the first half, you start wondering, is it going to be one of those nights? But they were patient about it. It was a very, very good opening goal as well. And in the end, they did get to rest some players. And I just hope, for the sake of everyone, not least the United supporters who've been deprived of a fair few FA Cup away ties in recent years, that they don't draw Reading at home as often as they have done in the last 15 years. I think this was like the fourth or fifth occasion that they've hosted them in an FA Cup tie. So not really one to get the pulses racing like at the race course on Sunday, but from, as I said, in the end, United got the job done, and it's a very good look going into February that they're going to be competing on four fronts.
Yeah, definitely. And Rich, to bring you in, you were there, as you said to me at half time on Saturday night, it wasn't the most inspiring of games, but it was Casemiro's brilliance really that unlocked things. Antony as well, very, very good in the second half particularly. And, you know, Casemiro, he was brought in to be this big defensive destroyer, which he's done very, very well. But going forward, he's a lot more effective than probably a lot of people thought he would be.
Yeah, like we said, you know, he almost got pigeonholed as the other guy at Real Madrid alongside Kroos and Modric, who were the star players, really, particularly at sort of international level. And Casemiro somewhat went under the radar, like you said, had this reputation wrongly of being a bruiser, of being this defensive midfield, no-nonsense player. But he's an absolute joy to watch, a real privilege to be able to watch him in a United shirt. But after the game, it was put to Paul Ince what he made of Casemiro. And he said, very rightly, that, you know, he's not judged on what he does against Reading. And I think that was an important message for United to take. I think the other important aspect is what Paul Ince also said, that, you know, a year ago, Reading probably would have felt they could beat United, and that just didn't happen. You know, they didn't really have any chance of doing it. I know it was the opportunity at the end of the first half, but it would have taken a colossal effort for them to actually get an upset. And it's testament that United have made these straightforward games look straightforward, because in the past they didn't do that, and every team came to Old Trafford and believed they'd get something. And you could make a case last season for United dropping points in every home game or not winning at home in any competition. And that just isn't the case anymore. So it's brilliant. And a key part of that has been the players that Ten Hag's brought in, and particularly Casemiro. He is just brilliant to watch. But I suppose the one downside is that knock to Eriksen, seen leaving the stadium on crutches. And it'll be interesting to see how that affects United's rhythm going forward, because, you know, United did the job, and in the end, you might say the result justified the means of getting it, but it did still, from my point of view, seem a bit of a needlessly strong selection from Ten Hag. It could have backfired if this Eriksen injury is quite severe. And while you might say that's respect to the competition, respect to Reading, it also maybe says that he doesn't quite trust those players in reserve yet, because United have a lot of options, but you just never get the sense they're going to be used properly. He tends to change his team when the opposition caters for it, and you maybe need to go a bit more defensive, except you're not going to have much of the ball. But in games where United are expected to dictate, they still go very, very strong. And yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe that was a hint from Ten Hag that he doesn't quite trust some of those players in reserve.
Yeah, certainly. And you've actually set me quite nicely up there for my next point. And Samuel, to take it back to you, obviously, Rich has mentioned there about going for quite a strong side of the weekend. It's something Ten Hag has done really throughout his tenure, certainly in both domestic cup competitions, where managers of the big clubs in the past have rang the changes and, you know, bloodied youngsters into the fold. So I think Ten Hag does deserve respect for that. But if this Christian Eriksen injury does prove to be quite serious, with Donny van de Beek already out, Scott McTominay missed out the weekend as well, United are quite thin on the ground in midfield, aren't they? Certainly for a ball-playing midfielder.
They certainly are. And really, Eriksen, in both games last week, there was a case not to start him in either of them. I think Fred's been very unfortunate in the last three games not to have started any of them. I'd have certainly started him against Arsenal. When he didn't start against Arsenal, I thought, well, he must come in against Forest. And when he didn't come in against Forest, you'd think, well, he's got to come in against Reading. For there to have only been one change was genuinely surprising. And it's very rarely that you feel surprised in football. And I don't think many United fans would have predicted that lineup, with Maguire being the only player coming in, which felt like a political selection, because if he can't even get a start against Reading, it reopens the debate about his future. And I think his future is only going one way. I don't expect anything imminent there, but certainly as far as the summer is concerned, he has got to assess his situation at United, unless something drastically happens that all of a sudden parachutes him back into the team. But Ten Hag, as we've said a number of times, he doesn't really do weekend teams. I think the most he's rotated all season was it eight changes against Charlton, I think, who obviously are a League One team. But he treated Reading with probably too much respect in a way to have made just the one change. Reading are 14th in the Championship. They've got a cast of, you know, Premier League years players, if you like. Shane Long was even on the bench, and I remember when he first played for Reading, and I think he played for Reading the first time they got promoted to the Premier League as well in 2006. So there's a bit of a bit of symmetry there. But there has to come a point where United have got eight games in February, and Ten Hag even referenced it. I think he got it wrong slightly when he said they had 10 games in 30 days, but I think it's 9 games in 30 days. But that that load on players, you've got to rotate, and he's not really doing that too much at all. I could kind of see the logic in playing such a strong side, because he's probably looking at the Palace game on Saturday and this Forest game in between, and because United have got such a good lead going into the Forest game, that may have altered his thinking, in that he looked at the result and thought, well, I will rest players in that second leg because they can't possibly cock that up, but I'll have to play them against Reading so they're not undercooked for the Palace game. Otherwise, they've gone too long without playing a game, and that's not to anyone's benefit, really. So it wouldn't surprise me if Varane, who hasn't had a kick in the last couple of games, actually comes in against Forest in the second leg. I think it would actually be quite sensible. And then you take him off maybe after an hour or whatever it will be, and then he can play against Forest. Of course, every player, whenever they play, there is a risk of injury. But when United are making so few changes in between games, it is going to get magnified, because there's clearly an unwillingness on Ten Hag's part to rotate. I get that. He wants to win the FA Cup. He wants to win the League Cup. The FA Cup is a very good opportunity now for United. Arsenal, Chelsea and Liverpool are all out. They beat Tottenham very well this season. They've beaten City this season. So they've got to fancy their chances of going on a good cup run, depending on tonight's draw. We're speaking on Monday. I think the draw's at about 7 o'clock. And so he's bound to treat that seriously. But February is such a mouth-watering month in terms of the fixtures, with back-to-back games against Leeds. They've got Barcelona twice a week apart. And they will almost certainly have a cup final at the very end of it. So this month coming up is absolutely vital, and he is trying to keep some players fresh. As I just mentioned, Varane is probably the most obvious player to go to there, and understandable as well given his injury record. But Eriksen is, I mean, we don't want to go on about what happened in Copenhagen during the European Championship, but I did ask Ten Hag earlier in the season, you know, trying to be polite about it as well, that essentially saying, you know, this guy, pretty much his heart's not beating on the pitch. Is there going to come a time where you have to rest him? And also Eriksen played in the World Cup as well, so it is surprising that Eriksen hasn't been rested more often. But there's not really a like-for-like replacement there. Fred is a good foil for Casemiro, but he's not exactly identical to Eriksen. That said, you know, I still think Fred's been very unfortunate not to have started more often recently, but in not starting as often, I think his reputation has probably improved in the eyes of United fans, who were maybe a bit sniffy about him when he was being overused under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah, he's certainly stepped it up this season, and another man that has stepped up recently, I would argue, is Antony. You know, most people thought that either Facundo Palestri or Alejandro Garnacho would have started on the right on Saturday night. But obviously Ten Hag, as Samuel said, probably looked at the two games, Forest and Reading, and thought, we've got a 3-0 lead in the Carabao Cup semi-final. Let's do our best to keep the FA Cup run going as well. Rich, I think Antony's inclusion on Saturday night was definitely justified. He had a really good game. And after what we saw at Forest last Wednesday night and on Saturday, even though there's slow signs of progression, he seems to be moving in the right direction at long last.
Yeah, and you know, he is still so new, not just to English football, but to European football, that I do think United just need to give him as many minutes as they can and hope that he builds that confidence, because it's going to be a learning curve. He's going to have to adapt his game. He still maybe will frustrate some fans when he stops the play, looks to come back on himself. That is just his style. You know, he's not this type of winger who beats a player for pace, really. He likes to beat them through trickery and artistry. And at times that can be frustrating because it can halt the momentum of an attack. But he just needs to play as often as possible and to learn really how to adapt his game to English football. There's definitely been positives. I think that he's adapted well to having Wan-Bissaka behind him as well. It's a different sort of fullback support than Dallow was offering earlier in the season. But Antony clearly has this preference to cut inside whenever he can, to link up play, lots of quick passes. And I think it is just a case of bedding in, really. I mean, the price tag will always be used against him. It's not his fault. He didn't choose that. You know, that is just something he's got to deal with. And it's as much on Ten Hag as it is on Antony for that to be justified, really. But United have had a right wing issue now for the best part of a decade. And on Saturday night, the right wing was causing all the issues for Reading, because I thought Wan-Bissaka, okay, he wasn't linking up with Antony that directly, but they were both getting on the ball quite a bit. Wan-Bissaka was getting in some really good attacking positions. It wasn't always choosing the right thing to do when he was there, but it was encouraging to see. And I think as well, from Wan-Bissaka's point of view, part of the reason why he's looking so much better is because he's got an actual designated right winger to play off and for them to actually work as a partnership. Whereas in the past, you know, United just haven't really had anyone on the right wing who's been a steady fix there. And they've always had to have this sort of plaster over a cut, you know. And, you know, it's going to take time. It's going to take time, Antony. We can't be expecting too much from him straight away. But he's serving a purpose. United have needed a right winger. They've got one and they've got to stick by him now. And again, as Paul Ince said, it's Reading in the Cup. These aren't the games that will define you as a Man United player. And there's some very big games on the horizon, particularly that Barcelona doubleheader. And that'll be a game where United want Antony to be going into it full of confidence, on a good run of form. And yeah, I'm impressed with him. I think he's doing all right. There's still a lot more for him to do. And of course, there's always going to be an element of wingers being judged by their goal output and those metrics. But in terms of what he's done, he's come in, fixed a key issue in the United squad. He's getting better. He's settling into life in a new country. And I think there is encouragement there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, personally, I thought he had a difficult afternoon at Arsenal, but, you know, he's since responded with a key hand in Veghorst's goal at Nottingham Forest, got the assist for Casemiro's opener on Saturday night. But Samuel, Richards mentioned there about the importance of him now having a right back behind him that seems to suit his style of play, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And we're recording this with, you know, just over 24 hours or so of the transfer window left. Not many people probably would have expected at the start of the month for Aaron Wan-Bissaka still to be here, and certainly not seemingly at the moment being Erik ten Hag's plans for, you know, a key position in the squad, with obviously Dalot's injury has been absolutely superb.
I think at the start of the month, the expectation was he would stay because he'd had a few starts, and Ten Hag might have said just before the January window opened that they had competition now at right back, which obviously until the World Cup they didn't have, because Wan-Bissaka was barely available. I think he was available for something like six games and he only came on in one. He was told in the summer that he was free to leave, but like every player who was part of the wreckage of last season, they were pretty much unsellable. United were in such a weak position to sell players, and that's why there were no real takers for Wan-Bissaka. But by not playing, his reputation pretty much recovered, and he's clearly good enough to play for a number of Premier League clubs, probably the majority of Premier League clubs. But for now, as you said, with Dalot's injury at the World Cup and then the setback he had against Charlton, I believe it was, that has allowed Wan-Bissaka ample game time to improve. I'd hesitate to say show what he can do, because he is still, I mean, Rich said it last week, the Arsenal game was him just hitting a ceiling, and that ceiling is unbreakable. I don't ever see him being a fullback in the guise of João Cancelo or Kieran Trippier or Reece James. I think that is beyond him. As a defensive right back, he's brilliant when he's on it. He's still got flaws, and we saw that against Arsenal with Eddie Nketiah's equaliser. If you want a goal against Wan-Bissaka, always cross to the far post where he's likely to be, because he's always switched off. But in the main, in the last 5 or 6 weeks, he's had a mini resurgence. But when it comes to the summer, if Ten Hag is telling United, I want a new right back who's more aligned with my thinking, they have to sell him, because it's been that muddled thinking, that indecision in the past that has held United back. Wan-Bissaka has been at the club 4 years come the summer. There's not really a compelling case to not sell him, I'd say. He's doing well at the moment. But again, if the manager really thinks a right back who is more aligned with what he wants, who's more attack minded, I know Sergiño Dest was obviously looked at, and he's not had a particularly productive time of it with AC Milan on loan this season, and he's probably the wrong profile, and it seemed a bit too convenient in the summer as well, given that he was another one of these players who was familiar to Ten Hag from playing at Ajax and playing in the Eredivisie. But you know, that they could be in a good position with Wan-Bissaka, in that he's, you know, his valuation has gone up. They're not going to ever make a profit on him, given the money that they paid for him at the time. But they have to look at it as a win-win situation. If he doesn't leave, they've got someone who's offering reliable support for Dalot. If he does want to leave, and if there's a taker, you sell him and you get some money into, and you get more funds to be spent on other areas of the squad. Dalot is still the best right back at United. It's easy for a period of, you go a period where a player hasn't played that much and another player's played and he's played reasonably well, and people can be quite fickle. But Dalot has had a very progressive 12-13 months with United, and if you're going off Ten Hag's impact, his coaching, Dalot has, he smashed through the odd ceiling or two, and there's probably more I still think there's another level he could go up to as well. It's just a pity for him that he did well to get into the Portugal team at the World Cup, got injured, and then he got injured quite quickly again for United, having gone a long time without getting any injuries. I think he'd gone something like 2 years, just over 2 years, without sustaining an injury, and that dated back to his time spent in Milan, where his fitness improved tremendously and he picked up things on the defensive side of it. So when Dalot's fit, he still has to start for me, and he was having a very, very good season for United until, unfortunately, twinged his hamstring against Morocco.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, certainly I would agree with that. He's been, for me, along with Rashford, probably United's most improved player this season. I think the signs are there as well. You know, since back in Thailand and Australia, that he was aligned with the way that Ten Hag wants to play. But obviously, you've touched on there about the Wan-Bissaka situation. Might be something to look at in the summer. Obviously, it's deadline day, January transfer window deadline day tomorrow. United have brought two faces in this month, Wout Weghorst and Jack Butland. With, you know, just over 24 hours to go, Samuel, it doesn't look as though it's going to be the busiest end into the window at Old Trafford, certainly not in terms of incomings anyway.
No, sorry, I just had a message from a colleague suggesting that United were going to Las Vegas in the summer for their pre-season tour, so that's always cause for celebration. Forgive me there. But as far as deadline day goes, on to far more important matters. It always seemed clear at the start of the month that the player coming in, a striker, was always going to be a loan option, or certainly not commanding much of a fee there whatsoever. And they got that done quite quickly. And also with, Dubravka's going to be a pub quiz answer, you'd imagine, for years to come. But they turned that around quite quickly. I think he left on the Sunday. Butland was done 4 or 5 days later. So that was pretty swiftly concluded. And Weghorst could have been a very complex deal, and I think the reason why none of us actually mentioned him as a possibility was because he was already out on loan. Other than that, he ticked all the boxes in terms of being Dutch, relatively cheap, possible loan option, you know, the kind of striker that United, who had a skill set that none of the forwards at United have got. And as far as tomorrow goes now, I think, you know, Rich knows a lot more than I do in terms of the youngsters who could go out on loan, but it seems like it will be limited to that. Today's an example, I suppose, of how unpredictable football can be. Obviously, Cancelo and Guardiola's relationship has not been great in recent weeks, but it's still a bit of a shock that he's on his way to Bayern Munich on loan. With I think they might have an obligation to buy him permanently, given that this is one of the, certainly in recent years, has been one of the best fullbacks in the Premier League. But that's how ruthless City can be. And you know, with United, they're really in the process now of just finalising their plans for the summer. Ten Hag, I asked him on Friday, did he know the areas that he wanted to strengthen? He said yes, pretty much. And they're also finalising their list of players who they deem sellable, or who they will try to sell in the summer as well. Because with these new FFP, or these new UEFA sustainability regulations that are coming in, there's increased pressure on clubs to sell players, which, I mean, it's still extraordinary. You look at the money that's been spent this month by the Premier League clubs, it makes up about 80%, maybe nearly 90% of the spending by the top five leagues in Europe. And I think the biggest transfers involving clubs in Serie A, La Liga, the Bundesliga and Ligue 1 have been sales to Premier League clubs. I think there was a loan that Arsenal had submitted last month for £70 million. They're now trying to buy Moises Caicedo for £70 million. Chelsea's have got this scattergun approach that you think is... I mean, something would have to go right there for that to be completely justified, but with the amount of players they've got on their books, they're going to be in a similar situation to United in recent summers, and that some clubs are just not going to meet their valuation of the players who are surplus there. Whereas United, because a lot of players left on freeze last summer, and because, as Murta acknowledged in one of the fans forums, they're pretty much ahead of the curve with their rebuild because of the investment that they had to make, really. And look, let's face it, a couple of those deals were enforced by the hammering at Brentford on August 13th. They don't need as many incomings in the summer coming up. I think it's everybody would agree a striker's essential. They do need a younger midfielder, possibly a right back. And then other areas, you're looking at it as, say, if Harry Maguire goes, they've got to bring a centre-back in, because the alternatives, well, they've only got three players there, because Tuanzebe and Jones will probably be released in the summer. So they'd have to sign a centre-back. And that might suit Ten Hag as well, because he might think, well, we've got two right-footed centre-backs. Martinez, left-footed centre-back. I've got Luke Shaw, but I could do with another left-footed centre-back. So I think their plan is pretty looking pretty sound at the moment. But some supporters are still living in fantasy land. I mean, there was a report earlier in the month, I think, that they triggered Enzo Fernandez's release clause, which is something like £100 million. I don't know where they think United were going to ever get this money from. United do not have really any money to spend of any significant note at the moment, because their two biggest signings in the summer were bankrolled. They own, I think they owe something like £306 million in transfer fees to clubs. 10 years ago, it was £34 million. So that's not just so much shot up. It's gone off the charts. And they're not in a position of strength yet. They need to get through this season. They need to have won a trophy. They need to be back in the Champions League. If they are under new ownership, those owners, or the owner, will take on the issues that still exist at the moment. But they will have to sell to buy in the summer. And in previous summers, that has been a constraint, or it's been seen as a negative. I think looking ahead to next season, that has to be a positive, because United are pretty inept at selling players. And if they're in a position of strength to sell players, and you look at those players that they would probably sell or could sell, you would imagine there'll be takers for them. And that can only be a good thing. The striker is the priority. I'm pretty confident they will have, or somehow get, the funds, or they'll put it on the company credit card to get a big striker in, whoever that may be. But that's going to be a huge investment. If you're talking about United, looking at Frenkie de Jong or Jude Bellingham, Bellingham's probably quite fanciful given the competition, but de Jong, certainly, I still think there could be something, you know, that could be worth a second pursuit, even though I just hope that it would be done by 1st of June rather than dragging into mid or late August. But you could see that still happening. But if they are to bankroll that, or to have the funds for that, they have to sell players. And although it's not as bloated a squad now, you could still probably reel off half a dozen, seven, close to 10 players that they should be looking to get off the books or put, at least put them out on loan with the loaning club covering the wages in full.
And speaking of loan clubs, Rich, as Samuel said, you've been across the stories of the youth players that could depart on deadline day. Zidane Iqbal, Charlie McNeil, probably among the leading contenders to possibly go. Can you bring us up to any speed with any further developments on that with the deadline day tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, Charlie McNeil's the one that's going to probably be the headline departure. He's still in talks over a loan move. Like I said on last week's podcast as well, that is very much the priority is to be playing. They don't really care what level it's at. Obviously, they're not going to drop too far down, but they're happy for him to play in League Two if that means he's going to be playing regularly every week. He just wants to be out there getting a proper taste of senior football, really, and to be cutting his teeth in the pro game. And, you know, he had a work experience loan with your beloved Sheffield Wednesday last season. I think he was there for a week where he was allowed to sort of do match preparation, train with the first team, but wasn't eligible to play in games. Iqbal's a difficult one because particularly after this Eriksen injury, you just can't really see why United would allow him to go out on loan because Van der Beek's already out to the end of the season. Like I said, McTominay missed at the weekend. It's not in United's interest, really. They've got to be selfish. They're in a good position now to get top four and win at least one domestic trophy, but they don't want to weaken themselves. So they have to be loaning out players who realistically aren't going to get any minutes in the first team at the moment. And for Iqbal, it's frustrating because he's not in the first team. He's been leapfrogged by Kobbie Mainoo, but he still is a player who has made his senior debut and, you know, has gone up the pecking order since the weekend, even though he's not played. So I can't see that one happening. They're still looking to send a few more, maybe lower profile players out on loan. And as we said last week as well, they like these sort of loan deals to non-league clubs where they can have sort of dual registration and have the youngsters still eligible to play for the United youth teams, but can also play in non-league matches because it's not part of the Football League's pyramid. So there's going to be some movement. United are still working on some deals, but I don't think it's going to maybe be as extensive as some fans would have liked. And of course, like we said, there's so much mitigation in these loans that the most promising youngsters, by virtue of having so much promise, are often quite unlikely to go out on loan because they could have a role to play for United over the coming weeks. So, yeah, I think it's going to be McNeil as the headliner and a few others beyond that. But, you know, there's always going to be mitigation, like we said, with Iqbal. I just can't see it happening anymore.
Yeah, it's certainly a bit of a conundrum, that one. And Samuel, to be fair to Zidane Iqbal, he was arguably United's breakout star of the pre-season tour in Australia and Thailand. Are you surprised that the fact that he's not stored a single minute of first-team football under his belt, he's not played since the draw with Young Boys in 2021 in December under Ralf Rangnick?
It is a surprise. He did very well on tour, and I suppose the galling thing for him now is that Mainoo's ahead of him. He's the one who's getting on the bench. He's the one who's had a start this season, who has come on in an FA Cup game as well. And I think what makes it especially galling for Iqbal is that there have been a couple of under-21 games this season that he's been withdrawn from because the first team have been playing the following night under the expectation he'd be needed for the first team. And then he's not quite made the cut in the end. He's been the 21st man. The injured player or an unwell player has been fit enough to make the bench or start a game. So he's in a bit of an invidious position at the moment because the club have been of the opinion that if he plateaus and he's just training with the first team, not playing, that they're okay with that. I don't think he's necessarily okay with that because he's had that experience of making his debut, of going on a pre-season tour, of doing well on that tour. And the under-21 league, it's not really beneficial for him anymore. And you forget how young he is. He is still 19. I think because he's been a name for quite a while, it feels like he's already in his 20s. But time just goes so quickly. It doesn't seem that long ago that Tedden Mengi was a 17-year-old in the Youth Cup team. Now I think he must be 20 now, and he didn't go on loan in the summer because he was injured. He's up against it now to get a loan deal before the end of the season. If that doesn't happen, you can't see him playing any competitive football between now and the rest of the season. So you're looking at August until he next plays a competitive game, which is disastrous for his development. This is someone who's played on loan at Derby County and Birmingham in the Championship, you know, quite big clubs at a very, very good level. And of course, if United send a player on loan to a Championship club and they're deemed good enough for the Championship, United are essentially of the opinion that they've got a shot of making it and coming back to the first team squad and staying there. So I do sympathise with Iqbal. I think because Mainoo is there, I think United should just allow him to go out on loan. But of course, the longer you wait, the longer you leave it, and then a couple of things happen, like Tomney not being in the squad and Eriksen leaving the ground on crutches on Saturday, that is bound to affect the decision makers and what they decide to do there.
And Rich as well, another one, just briefly, is Deshaun Bernard as well. He had obviously a really good loan spell at Hull City last season. Is he one that you think possibly could sneak out of the exit door before the bell?
Yeah, he's certainly one player that United are happy for him to leave. Again, he needs to be playing senior minutes really now. I mean, he's a player who often gets sort of categorised as a youngster, but he isn't a youngster anymore. You know, I mean, how old is he? 22 years old?
Yeah, so like
he's
that.
A player who needs to be out playing proper football now. He's impressed on two different loan spells, but he's sort of plateaued as well. And it's by no means a criticism of him, but you just don't see a long-term future for him at United anymore. He's a player who will go on to have, I'm sure, a very good Football League career, but just needs to be out there and maybe have a fresh start, because you often find it that these players, they burst onto the scene, don't quite ever make it in terms of the first team, and they just get caught at a crossroads where there's no point playing them in the youth team anymore and they're not good enough to be involved regularly at a senior level. So from his point of view, he's still keen to get out the door. That's been the case throughout the window, really. But it's just matching him with a club where it's going to benefit him as well. Because from United's point of view, there's always a reluctance just to send a player out on loan and to get them out of their way, really, because they still have a duty of care to the player for them to develop and have a better chance of making it in the game. So they've got to match them with clubs where there's going to be a guarantee of minutes and a key role to play, and a team that's going to benefit them as an individual. Some players thrive by going to relegation threatened clubs, some don't, and you've got to match them to the right club and to the right manager as well.
Yeah, right fit is certainly important for any player, obviously, of a young age. But to wrap this up, guys, obviously the relentless schedule that it's been continues on Wednesday night. Nottingham Forest, another game. A marathon at the minute, it really is. Forest in the second leg of their Carabao Cup semi-final. Samuel, surely this can't possibly go wrong. United 3-0 up from the first leg. Practically got one foot down Wembley Way already. Do you think Ten Hag will maybe this time ring quite a few changes?
I would imagine there'll be more than one change on this occasion. There certainly needs to be. I think the Eriksen injury is probably, you'd think that has sufficiently scared Ten Hag, or maybe not scared Ten Hag. He doesn't really strike me the person who gets scared of anything. But that's certainly a red flag going into what is an extremely hectic month, a month of eight games in 26 days, which is, when you put it like that, and you look at how febrile some of those games will be against Leeds United, how just the mental toll of it as well. If they're you know, going toe to toe with Barcelona, and that goes the full distance with extra time, the focus that's going to be required in that leg. They're coming up against the best team in Spain at the moment. So from our perspective, it's great to have so many games to cover and some really tantalising games as well. Obviously, Leeds is a huge rivalry. Barcelona, United, there's a rich history in European competition there, dating back to the Cup Winners' Cup game in 84. But yeah, they're in a good position now with the Forest game, and that has really helped them. The fact that they won 3-0 last week, and then they had an eminently winnable game against Reading to prepare for this very taxing month, where, of course, I mean, you can't underestimate the Premier League situation as well. I mean, it's not, I think, because of their form recently, it's almost felt like that they could have had or could have top four boxed off quite early. But Tottenham have made up a bit of ground on them. They can't really slacken off there whatsoever. Palace rarely get beaten badly by United at Old Trafford. They've had a decent record there in recent years, so they certainly can't be remotely complacent for that game next Saturday. So as important as getting to a cup final, there's no question in my mind that the most important game for United this week is Palace on Saturday.
Yeah, it's certainly another big one in that battle for the top four. And Rich, just to wrap things up, United more than likely, I know anything can happen in football, are likely to face Newcastle in the final of the Carabao Cup at Wembley at the end of February. Do you think United have got what it takes to go all the way and get a trophy boxed off pretty quickly under Ten Hag?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, Newcastle at home was a really tricky game this season. Of course, it was the 0-0. There was that controversial disallowed goal for Ronaldo in that game. Mainu was on the bench because Eriksen was ill. It was, you know, that they are a really good team, Newcastle. They're the only team, certainly heading into the weekend, who had more clean sheets than United in any of the top five European leagues. So they're a tough team to beat. They've got real good momentum around them. It'll be a real good party atmosphere for Newcastle fans if they do get to Wembley. But United have those players who have been there and won it. They've done it before. The likes of Varane, the likes of Casemiro, they come into their own in those sort of occasions. They've got such a winning mentality. It's an infectious one as well that's really rubbed off on the rest of the United team. And you know, not even the Carabao Cup, but you'd say United have a real good chance of a domestic cup double this season. Obviously, there's the mitigation of the FA Cup draw, and as Samuel said, we're recording it before that. But, you know, for example, City could get Tottenham in it, and Tottenham typically have City's card. They've quite often found a way to beat them. So, you know, it can really open up. United are second favourites, the second highest ranked team left in the FA Cup. They're the highest ranked team left in the Carabao Cup. Like you said, one foot in the final. Yeah, United fans should be very confident, and they might not be the two biggest prizes in football, but they can certainly be the springboard for them to then go on and win them in a few years' time.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, to end the year with one, two, maybe even three trophies, you never know, if the Europa League goes to plan as well and get in the top four, it would be a remarkable season and a far cry from what happened last year and a long way from the defeats to Brentford and Brighton at the start of the season. But that's all we've got time for on today's episode of the Manchester's Red podcast. Thank you to Samuel and Rich for joining me this Monday lunchtime.
Thank you, George.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And as I said at the beginning, we are available on all of the usual podcast platforms and now on YouTube as well. Just search Manchester's Red and you can subscribe to the channel there. We'll be back later in the week to reflect on the second leg against Forest and look ahead to Saturday's clash with Crystal Palace at Old Trafford as well. So take care and we'll catch you again very soon.